Hello and welcome to the latest episode of The Dugout from Sports Mall. I'm Pascal Lemaire and Barney Corker was with me again today. It's a week since we were last with you and plenty has happened in the football world with the completion of the Champions League last 16 first legs and the Europa League round of 32. We start this week though with Sunday's League Cup final between Liverpool and Manchester City. Barnes, who do you think is going to win the first trophy of the season?
Oh, it's a really interesting final, isn't it? Obviously, I think Man City are going to go into the game as favourites in the eyes of many because of their league position. They've been more impressive than Liverpool for the majority of the season, but there's always that question mark with Liverpool under Klopp. They're capable of pulling off really good performances on the biggest stage. They've done it already against Man City, of course, at the Etihad, winning 4-1, one of their standout performances of the season. Done it more recently, beating Aston Villa 6-0. So they're capable of those big, big wins. And if they turn up on the occasion with a performance like that, then it's perfectly feasible that Liverpool will come away with it. City, they aren't in the best form going into it, obviously. They had a terrible spell with those two defeats in the Premier League to title rivals and then the loss to Chelsea in the FA Cup with a really weakened side. Did bounce back against Dynamo Kiev. That was a good performance in midweek to get to pretty much put one foot in the quarterfinals of the Champions League for the first time ever. So, you know, they'll be coming into it full of confidence, but there is always that question mark with Liverpool. Under Klopp, they're capable of those big, big performances. They've done it far too inconsistently so far under Klopp, but they're capable of it. Klopp is probably one manager you would pick out of most in the world to be able to get his players up for such an occasion like this, and for him to get a trophy so soon into his reign, just 4 months after being appointed, would be a big bonus. Obviously, Brendan Rodgers didn't get one in 3 years, so for Klopp to get one in within 4 months of taking over would be a massive bonus. And to be honest, I think it could go either way. It's a really tough one to call.
I think it is, yeah, and both sides obviously winning midweek in Europe as well. And I think starting with City, their game in Kiev, you know, Pellegrini criticised, you know, by quite a few people with the way he picked that team for the Chelsea game. So many youngsters, but, you know, when they're fighting on all four fronts and the way the fixture list worked out, he just said the FA Cup, you know, it has to go on the back burner. And they prioritised that game against Kiev because, you know, the Champions League has been their main goal for a few years now. And you have to say that they play fantastically in that game. I mean, I thought Kiev weren't good at all. Some of the defending for the goal City scored, and they presented City with a lot of chances. You know, the first one, Aguero easily allowed to score in the box, and then it was just too easy for City after that. You know, the way the David Silva got in for the second one, and then Yaya Toure allowed to shoot far too easily. At one point, it looked a bit nervy for City when, you know, Kiev got one back to make it 2-1, and then Joe Hart made a fantastic save to keep City ahead in that game. But on the whole, it was a really good performance for City, and three away goals. You know, Kiev aren't going to come to the Etihad and overturn that, so City will go through. And like we said last week, there's a couple of weak ties in the last 16 in the Champions League. So if City go through and avoid, you know, the likes of Barcelona, Real Madrid, those sort of big teams, then there's a real chance they could, you know, go quite far in Europe. And they're not out of the Premier League title race yet. But I think in midweek, that City performance was really good. And as for Liverpool, you know, they edged past Augsburg in the end, didn't they? But you're so good in the first half, I think. But it got a bit nervy in the second half, didn't it?
It did, yeah. And the frustration will be that they weren't able to kill the game off. And that I mentioned the big performances, the big wins Liverpool have already had under Klopp this season. But on the flip side of that, there were games where they create a lot of chances, but they don't take enough chances and they can't kill teams off. It would have been a lot better for them had they obviously got a 2-0, 3-0 lead quite early on, as they threatened to do at times. In the end, it was the fifth-minute penalty for Milner that proved to be the difference. But again, it wasn't the greatest performance against a side who were struggling at the wrong end of the Bundesliga table, so it wasn't exactly tough opposition. So, you know, coupled with the 0-0 draw against Augsburg a week previously, they're not coming into it in the greatest form themselves in terms of performances. Okay, they're three unbeaten, three clean sheets in a row, which is obviously a big plus, but the performances in the last two games since that 6-0 win over Aston Villa haven't been too encouraging. Again, though, Klopp is always capable of getting the team up for it. I think for Man City, the key thing will be that full-strength team. Liverpool have had a decent rest, unusually so, between Europa League matches. They haven't often had 7 days to recover, but Man City, as you mentioned, resting all those key players against Chelsea, they should be refreshed even after their long trip to Ukraine, which may take something out of their legs for them, but especially as most of their key players had to play for the majority of their match. But still, that weekend off against Chelsea seemed to do them wonders against Kiev, and they'll be hoping they do the same. I think it was against Kiev, it was only the fifth or sixth time that the main core of players, Hart, Company, Toure, Silva and Aguero, had all started this season. So that goes to show, you know, how much they've struggled with injuries so far this season. And if they had those five key players fit all season, then for me they'd probably be top of the Premier League and going strong on all fronts, really. I think this weekend's game is a big priority for them, because you look at their position in all other competitions, obviously now out of the FA Cup. You mentioned they could get through to the semi-finals of the Champions League with a kind draw, but I can't see them beating a Barcelona or a Real Madrid or a Bayern Munich, probably even a Juventus on the form of those current other teams. And then in the Premier League, they're 6 points off top. So this is definitely their most likely route of a piece of silverware this season. And it's a tournament which holds a special place for Manuel Pellegrini. It was his first trophy when he arrived here at Man City. So he'll be taking it seriously, and he'll be desperate to sign off with at least one piece of silverware. And this is their best chance of doing it at the moment. And arguably, they're not out of the Premier League title race, but it's a tough ask to claw back a six-point deficit on Leicester, yet alone Tottenham and Arsenal also above them. So this is probably certainly their main chance of a trophy, and probably their only chance of a trophy this season, I think.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The only thing I'd say is that with the league, I think the return of Kompany is absolutely massive for this team, because he was so good at the start of the season. Even on Wednesday night against Kiev, he really marshalled defence well. And the only thing I'd say I'd be wary of if I was a Man City fan is that against Kiev, they pressed so high, and Otamendi especially, he just kept jumping in on all these tackles. And to be fair to them, he won most of them, and he really stood out for all the tackles he made. But I saw some of Liverpool's game against Augsburg on Thursday, and they were pinging the ball around in the first half really nicely. And I just worry that if City, this gung-ho defending where they're jumping in, trying to win the ball a lot of the time, that Liverpool might be able to unlock them like that. And Sturridge has come back now. He's started a few games recently, and he's looked pretty good. He came off, I think, after just about an hour last night. So he should be pretty fresh for the weekend. And he might just fancy his chances against the likes of Otamendi, who, like I said, he can look really good sometimes, but he's just a bit haphazard in his defending.
Yeah, and obviously Man City's defence has been criticised quite a few times this season without Kompany. But if Liverpool play like they did at the Etihad earlier this season, with all that movement, Firmino and Coutinho in particular linking up so well, that then even with Kompany in the side, I think Man City would struggle to deal with them, because they were so good in that match. And it's a good point you mentioned with all the fluid passing. When Liverpool are at their best, it is tough for any team to defend against them. And if Otamendi does come with that aggressive style of play, then it is entirely likely that players, the likes of Coutinho, Firmino, with the guile to get in behind them, will do exactly that. And like the point I made with Man City earlier, with all the players they've had injured, I think Liverpool, if they had had Sturridge and Coutinho fit for the whole season, Skrtel's been out for quite a long time now, so if they had had a full strength side for the whole season as well, I think they'd be challenging, certainly up in the top four for the Premier League. So, to have Sturridge back in the side is such a huge boost. Benteke just, he slows everything down. He seems to get in the way more than he does enhance the team for Liverpool. And Sturridge, as soon as he came back in, he's only played, I think, ten appearances this season now, and he scored 5 goals. So he's come back into the side. He's immediately got back on the goal foot, and he just looks so much more of a threat than a Benteke does for Liverpool so far this season. So to have him back in the side, and to have Coutinho supplying the chances for him as well, is a huge boost for Liverpool going into this game.
Yeah, I think Benteke even he's definitely third choice now, isn't he? Origi seems to be the one coming off the bench if Sturridge isn't playing, and certainly Benteke looks like he's really flopped this season. And I don't know, it'd be interesting to see if maybe they sell him in the summer, because certainly under Jurgen Klopp, it hasn't really worked out for Benteke. But come on then, Barnes, neutral hat on. Who's going to win? What's the score going to be this weekend?
I'm going to back Liverpool. I think Jurgen Klopp's side got a big performance in them, and it's their first trip to Wembley since 2012. They haven't won a trophy since 2012, so they'll be desperate to get that. Klopp's got a decent record in cup competitions from his days in Germany as well, so I'm going to go for a Liverpool win 2-1, I think.
2-1. I'll go the other way. I think City, I know everyone says about the travelling to Ukraine and all that, but the way players travel these days and the way teams travel, it shouldn't make that much of a difference. You can, if you want to, I'm sure you can sleep pretty comfortably on the plane and all that kind of stuff. And I think they've had an extra day's rest, City, and I just think that the way they looked in midweek, like you said, it was so important for them to have the backbones of their team all playing. And I think they'll come out on top. 3-2, I'm going to go for a goal fest, hopefully at Wembley. But moving on to some of the other English teams in Europe this week, the big game on Tuesday night at the Emirates, Arsenal-Barcelona, a massive occasion for Arsenal. And I watched the game and I thought, Barcelona weren't firing on all cylinders like everyone expected them to in the end. Messi's 2 goals in the second half. The first one was absolutely brilliant, the way Barca broke out from defence. And Neymar should never have been allowed to get that first pass off to Suarez on the wing. And from there, it was just beautiful the way... I mean, there was two nutmegs in it as well. You know, Neymar's pass to Suarez goes through Koscielny's legs, and then Suarez's pass back to Neymar through Mertesacker's, I think it was. So a bit unlucky there, Arsenal. But then the way Neymar waited for Messi's run, and the way Messi stopped and then finished, it was absolutely gorgeous the way he put it away. And then Flamini came on and made that stupid tackle, didn't he? Just concede the penalty. Messi sticks it away, and 2-0. It's no real chance for Arsenal. Had it been just 1-0, they might have had a slight chance going into the second leg. But I think they certainly created chances in that game. Oxlade-Chamberlain's in the first half was a massive miss. And then Ter Stegen made that really good save from Giroud. Ramsey missed a chance as well. I think Arsenal did play pretty well in that. I thought Sanchez was disappointing. Ozil quite disappointing as well. You know, they're two star players, but other people did, you know, turn up on the night. And yeah, just one of those performances for Arsenal where on another day they could have easily won that game. You know, if that was a one-off final, honestly, on another day they could have maybe snuck a win in that game. But over two legs, when you lose the first leg like that, you haven't really got a chance. And you can say that they're unlucky in the sense that you know, Barca was a really tough draw, and obviously they had Bayern Munich in the group as well. But you know, it's not luck. You need to beat all these teams if you're going to get there. And obviously Barca was a really tough draw, but not the result Arsenal needed.
No, not at all. And you know, there was a lot of encouragement to come from the result, but it's just this Barcelona side are too good. Arsenal did really well in the first half to keep them at bay. They got a lot of praise for their performance in the first half, but it's just, you know, you have to be 100% on your game defensively for the full 90 minutes against that front three. And Arsenal just in the end had a couple of lapses, and that cost them in the end. And even Wenger says now their chance of going through are 5%, and that might even be being a bit generous to Arsenal. For them to win 2-0 or more at the Nou Camp is almost an impossible task against this Barcelona side. And as I say, there were encouraging signs to them, and they won't be too disheartened from them, but this Barca side are just too good. That, you know, it was a decent performance at times from Arsenal. They just got outclassed in the end, and that's what we expected to happen. It proves that they're not at the level of Europe's elite, as we expected that they weren't. So, you know, difficult one for Arsenal to take, considering they held out for, you know, 70 minutes there, which is longer than many people expected to against Barcelona, and they played a bit better, matched Barcelona more than many people expected to. But for me, you know, they got no chance of making the quarterfinals now.
No, not at all. And yeah, just another point on that Flamini incident. I just thought that it was just so stupid for him, because you can see on the replays that his eye went and he saw Messi coming just from the other side, and he still kicked out so rashly at the ball. And you know, there was just no need to do that, and it's just costing his team like that. It was just obviously very silly, and obviously makes Wenger look bad for sending him on. But yeah, like I said, you know, when you see how bad Kiev were against City, you know, Arsenal, they could say perhaps they're slightly unlucky with a draw. And like I say, if that had been the final against Barcelona and they played that well in the final, on another day they could have easily got a draw in that game, because they like you said, they did match them for large parts there. But over two legs, it was just never going to work out for them, really, was it? And I think they can be proud of some elements, but obviously the finishing, you have to take your chances. And Wenger said that afterwards, you know, you have to take your chances against teams like that, and they couldn't do that. And that's where maybe they're missing that world class striker that everyone, you know, says they need, you know, the last few transfer windows. But you know, Giroud, I thought the header to Stegen kept out, he did everything he could there. It was a really good header and just a great save as well. But as for Tuesday night's other match, this was the one you watched on Tuesday night, Bayern versus Juve. What was that game like?
Yeah, fantastic game, really, really entertaining Champions League tie. And it's incredible really that it finished 2-2, because the level of dominance Bayern enjoyed in the first hour was remarkable to see. I've rarely seen something like it between two teams so big. You know, Juventus, they're the champions of Italy, reached the final of the Champions League last season on a fantastic run of 15 wins in a row, and then a draw before the game going into Tuesday's match. So Bayern Munich made them look completely ordinary in their own backyard. For the first hour, they just dominated possession. Juventus maybe gave them a bit too much respect on the ball, and Bayern just took full advantage. It was complete one-way traffic. Thomas Müller got the goal, and then Arjen Robben got another goal. Juventus punished for letting him cut inside. It was pretty obvious exactly what Robben was going to do as soon as he picked up the ball, but Juventus just couldn't stop him. He cut inside and bent the ball home, and it looked pretty much tie over at that point. 55 minutes gone, Bayern Munich 2-0 up away from home in the first leg. It was hard to see Juventus coming back, because they'd been just second best for the entire game up to that point. But Dybala got the goal back on the 63rd in the 63rd minute. It was the first real defensive lapse from Bayern Munich. They did look susceptible to a long ball over the top throughout the game. On the rare occasions Juventus were actually able to come forward, but this time the ball just squirmed under the foot of Kimmich and the makeshift Bayern Munich defence as well. Another thing to note: this is a Bayern Munich defence who's struggling with injuries at the moment. So for them to have looked so dominant in the first hour is even more incredible. But that one mistake allowed Dybala to get the goal, and then Storaro got the equaliser, which rescues at least a little glimmer of hope for Juventus. The final half an hour was good, and if they can perform like that in the second leg, then they do have a chance. But at the same time, it's hard to see Bayern Munich, you know, with two away goals. It's level on aggregate, but Bayern do have the advantage, and they've got a 100% record in all competitions at home so far this season as well. So it's really tough to see Juventus coming back from that. But again, they will take a lot of heart from that final half an hour, because they were ordinary in the first hour, made to look ordinary by Bayern Munich. So if they can perform like they did in the final half an hour, then they've got a bit of a chance. But for me, it's still Bayern Munich's tie to lose that one.
Yeah, I was going to say, surely, obviously a great comeback from Juve, but the fact that Bayern now go home, where you say they've got an amazing record this season, they're definitely going to be favourites going into that game. And people questioned whether, you know, Guardiola, whether he'd really done as well as he could have done in Europe with Bayern. But, I mean, you sound pretty impressed with how well they played, you know, in the early stages of that match. And are they now, say, second favourites behind Barcelona to win the Champions League this season?
I think so. I hadn't seen too much of Bayern Munich this season before that game on Tuesday, and what I saw I was so impressed with, because as I say, this is one of the top teams in Europe, the second best team in Europe last season, when you see they came runners up of the Champions League. So they were made to look like just a couple of leagues below Bayern Munich. It was incredible how much they dominated possession. It was hard to see anyone really doing anything different, because Juventus, they were powerless to do anything different. They were perhaps giving them a bit too much time on the ball, like I said, but when they were in possession themselves, Bayern were just all over them. They couldn't get anything going, Juventus. So, you know, it was really difficult to see them getting back into the game. They eventually managed to do so, and those two goals, as well as giving Juventus hope, will probably give other teams in the Champions League hope that, you know, Bayern aren't completely invincible. But for me, that performance in the first hour does lift them probably above Real Madrid and just behind Barcelona as the favourites for this season's competition.
Yeah, it should be a very interesting return leg back in Germany. The only other tie we haven't talked about from midweek in the Champions League, PSV and Atletico Madrid, 0-0 draw on the night. PSV had a man sent off in that game, so in the end probably did quite well to hold Atletico to a goalless draw, you know, prevented them getting an away goal. But, you know, the way Atletico, you know, their clean sheet record under Simeone, I mean, they're going to be big favourites going back to the Vicente Calderon, aren't they?
Yeah, they are, and you'd expect them to do the business. PSV, they've done pretty well to get this far, to be honest. They've drawn in a group with Man United as well. Some people didn't expect them to get through. Wolfsburg and United were probably the two favourites to get through that group. So PSV, they've done well to get through this far, and then to hold Atletico, who are one of the top teams in Europe. They're second in La Liga at the moment, so they're right up there with Barcelona and Real Madrid. So a 0-0 draw is a decent result for PSV, but probably not good enough still. You'd expect Atletico to get the win. As you mentioned, they've got a ridiculously good clean sheet record under Simeone, and that's even better at home. So they'll be pretty confident of keeping PSV at bay in terms of attacking, and they're the masters probably in European football of, you know, nicking a goal, nicking a 1-0, 2-0 victory. So they'll be heavy favourites for that one in me. For that tie, and I can't really see PSV doing anything to stop Atletico going through to the quarters.
Yeah, and a big game for Atletico this weekend as well, isn't it? They play Real Madrid in La Liga, and you know, it's a must-win game for Real, really, isn't it? The way the table's looking, if they're going to have, I'm pretty sure, well, they shouldn't really be able to catch Barcelona given how well Barca are playing at the moment. But for Real Madrid, they really have to win this weekend, don't they?
They do, to stand any chance, really. The draw against Malaga last weekend was a real hammer blow to their title hopes. I think there was a big feeling that they needed really to win that if they were to keep up with Barcelona, who, as you mentioned, are just absolutely flying at the moment. They're 8 points clear of Atletico, 9 clear of Real Madrid. So it's such a big ask for Real Madrid to claw that back, even with a win this weekend. But as you say, a win this weekend is vital. Anything else, you know, they could be as much as 12 points behind Barcelona, and With 12 games of the season remaining and Barcelona in this form scoring the amount of goals they're scoring, it's hard to see them coming back from that. It's not going to be an easy match. As we mentioned, Atletico's fantastic clean sheet record, and they tend to turn up against the likes of Real Madrid and Barcelona. They've got a decent record over the last few years under Simeone in those big games, and they're right up there, as I mentioned, with those three. So Real Madrid might be slight favourites, but it's going to be a close match, and if they can get the win, it might give them the boost, it might give them a bit of hope to push on and, you know, challenge Barcelona right to the end. But it's going to be really tough, even if they do win. And if they don't win, I think they can kiss goodbye to their title hopes.
Yeah, because even though Barca, you know, they're still in the Copa del Rey, still in the Champions League, that team, they just never look tired, do they? They can trot their stars out, you know, every game, and they never seem to have a problem really there, do they? So you fully expect, I mean, even if Barca drop the odd point here and there, you wouldn't expect Real and Atletico to be able to, you know, win every game and be able to catch them. So it looks like Barca's title in La Liga. But moving on to the Europa League, we've already talked about Liverpool going through, edging out Augsburg 1-0 on aggregate. As for Manchester United, it was a bit of a weird night at Old Trafford, wasn't it? Because they obviously lost 2-1 in Denmark to Midtjylland. And then, you know, big favourites even after that defeat in the first leg. But then they fall behind last night, and eventually they, you know, run out 5-1 winners. I mean, Midtjylland running out of steam, I'm guessing, and obviously Rashford making all the headlines on his debut. What did you make of the game?
Yeah, it was a lot less comfortable for United than the scoreline suggests. 5-1 makes it look like they cruise through. 6-3 on aggregate makes it look like they cruise through. But it wasn't really until the last 15 minutes where they began to look like they were actually going to go through on the night without the help of extra time. It was, you know, Midtjylland, it was one-way traffic in terms of Manchester United attack, and they absolutely dominated possession. There was only one team really looking to get the goal, and then Midtjylland, completely out of the blue, opened the score with a really good goal from Sisto. Such good composure. You'd say poor defending from United. It was pretty clear at that point to see that they had two midfielders in Carrick and Blind at the back, because they both dived in rashly and just gave Sisto just the easy way into the box, into a good shooting position. And then Romero should have done better in goal as well. But the United responded really well to going behind. They could, with such a young team, their heads could easily have dropped again 3-1 behind on aggregate against these unknowns, these minnows of European football. So to make a good response straight away would have been good. They got a bit of luck with the own goal from Bodjarov, but it was made by Memphis, who was, Rashford made the headlines, but Memphis was the absolute star that night. It was one of the best, it was certainly his best performance of his Man United career. It was one of the most one-sided winger versus fullback duels that I have seen for a long, long time. It was Roma for Midtjylland had one of the worst performances I think I've ever seen. It was absolutely dreadful. He just got skinned every single time Memphis came up against him. He didn't know whether he was going on the inside or the outside. Usually the criticism of Memphis is that he cuts inside far too often, but he was doing it on the outside this time. He was bringing out all the skills, just beating him every time. And then Roma goes and concedes the penalty, which was subsequently missed by Mata, and then gets sent off late in the game. It was truly a 0 out of 10 performance from him. It was horrendously bad. So Memphis was the key architect of that victory. It was a fantastic performance from him. Rashford did really well to get the two goals. It was good movement and good finishing from him. He didn't do too much aside from that. He had a few explosive moments where he looked decent, but didn't do too much aside from the two goals. But they were the two crucial goals. They levelled it on aggregate and then put them ahead on aggregate. And to have come in with, what, about 10 minutes notice after Anthony Martial pulled up in the warm-up, really good for him. Such a good way to mark his debut. And then late on, it was Herrera's penalty. Depay marked his man of the match performance with a deserved goal either side of the Roma red card, which made it added a bit of gloss to the scoreline. And in the end, it looks like a comfortable victory. It wasn't that comfortable for Manchester United, but it was a good performance. They deserved the victory. They deserved to go through. But a word for Midtjylland, they did really well, even to reach the knockout stage, even to reach the group stages of the Europa League, to be honest, for the first time in their history. And they got the goal at Old Trafford. It looked like being at one.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
point enough to send them through. But in the end, yeah, they did run out of steam in the end. A bit of a late collapse, lost their heads in the end a bit to concede those two goals, concede two penalties over the course of the match, and have a man sent off. So United through in the end. They were given a scare, but they, in the end, got the job done.
Yeah, just back to Rashford. I saw some tweets last night of sort of saying things like, you know, 18-year-old Mancunian-born United fan scores two on his debut to send United through, fantastic and all that. And you've got to step back a bit and just think, you know, United have gone 3-1 down to a small team from Denmark here, and then, you know, had to fight back, and, you know, in the end they sort of run out of steam and they've just had their winter break. It's, you know, you can't get too excited about this guy, you know, playing and obviously scoring. I mean, I thought they were both really good finishers as well, but even so, you wouldn't expect him to now become a regular fixture in the Premier League this season, would you?
Well, no, because he was only in the squad because there was an injury to Will Keane and Shrewsbury, and Will Keane would have only been in the squad probably because there's an injury to Wayne Rooney at the moment. So, you know, there was a lot of... He's quite far down the pecking order. Those two goals might have put him bumped him above Keane, but it's hard to see him becoming a regular anytime soon. As I say, his movement was good and he did well, but this was Mitchell, and, you know, they're not the level of most of the teams you're going to come up against in the Premier League. So, yeah, it's right to issue a bit of caution. Obviously, a dream debut for the kid. You don't want to take that away from him. But, you know, there's a long, long way to go if he's to surpass the likes of Rooney and Martial or anyone to be a regular starter in the side. And, as I say, he got a stroke of luck even to get the start. But, at the same time, a lot of United players, youngsters, have been given starts through injuries. United going through a terrible injury crisis at the moment. Obviously, that Martial injury only exacerbated that in midweek. So, for them to have won so comfortably, it's the first time they've scored five goals in a game under Van Gaal. So, it was probably their best attacking performance under the Dutchman so far. So, for them to score five goals with a pretty makeshift side, look at two players making their debut with Riley, including Rashford, and a lot of youngsters in the squad, two midfielders at centre back. The fullbacks between them had six senior appearances between them, so there's a real makeshift side. To come away with the victory will be a plus for Van Gaal, and to come away with an attacking victory as well, five goals in the game, will be a real plus for them. But, you know, I think the damage done in the first leg when they lost 2-0, that was pretty much, it was going to take a big victory for them to undo that with a win in the second leg, because everyone was expecting them to get through. Not sure the manner of the 5-1 victory with the two late goals and falling behind did that. And while the last two wins on paper look impressive, 3-0 and 5-1, you have to remember that they're up against Shrewsbury and Michelin, so it's been very interesting to see how they do this weekend when there's a real test against Arsenal.
Yeah, just going back to your point about sort of young players getting chances, you know, Luke Shaw being injured and a couple of other players means that Borthwick Jackson's got to play, and he's actually really impressed, isn't he? So maybe, you know, Rashford could take some heart from that and might be able to see some game time in the near future. But as for Memphis, you know, he's, you know, you said that was his by far his best performance for United, and his other good performances since, you know, last summer's move tend to have come in Europe. But do you think just how good he was last night might just be able to propel him, you know, in the Premier League and back in England, so he can really impress domestically?
Well, United would certainly hope so, because they could really do with him coming good with, as I say, their injury crisis, and with Martial now playing as a striker, Depay's going to get a long run in out on the right position there. And if he looked like a world beater last night, you'd say probably the opposition wasn't the best, but the skills he was doing and the way he was making the fullback guess would hurt any defence, really, because he didn't know whether he was going to come inside, cut inside on his right foot, and then curl one towards goal, which he's more than capable of doing and has done a few times, or whether he was going to go on the outside. There was one stage early in the match, first thing he did was cut inside, and we thought, okay, he's going to do that most of the game now. But then the next time he went on the outside, didn't use his left foot and made a mess of the cross, but then it had the fullback guessing, and he didn't know which way he was going to go every time, and he kept him guessing every time. It was a really, really good performance from him, and if he can play like that in the Premier League, even against higher calibre opposition, he's going to give anyone a difficult time of it, and it shows what he can do. The challenge for him now is to do that on a more regular basis. When he arrived in England, I thought he was going to be a really good signing. Obviously, fantastic season last season, scored a lot of goals, hasn't happened for him, but such a good performance last night could be the catalyst for him to kick on and maybe start showing his best in the Premier League as well.
Yep, so good win for United last night. Spurs also going through 4-1 aggregate winners over Fiorentina, and that's the game that I was on last night, and I have to say that Spurs were pretty good, but I was more disappointed with Fiorentina. This is a team that in Serie A. They're only 6 points behind Juve, sitting third in the table. You know, they should have been a lot better than they were. Because in the first leg, first half of the first leg, they sat back, let Spurs have the ball. Spurs went 1-0 up at half time, and then Fiorentina got better in the second half, got a deflected goal to get back in. It won all after the first leg, because they played last season as well, Spurs and Fiorentina, and that was the scoreline after the first leg last year as well. But difference this year, Spurs had the second leg at home, and they really cruised to victory last night. Ryan Mason put them ahead with a... I mean, it was a good finish the way he opened his body, but it was so obvious that was what he was going to do, and the keeper seemed to take an age to try to get down to save it. And yeah, it looked like a decent finish, but I think the keeper certainly could have done better. And then Fiorentina, after half-time, they really came out quite well, and just like last week, they looked quite dangerous straight after half-time. But Spurs managed to keep him out and then got that crucial second goal, which just put the tie out of Fiorentina's reach. Lamella, he made his return and got the goal as well. And then after that, it was pretty easy for Spurs. They got a third goal, Rodriguez with an own goal as well, with Trippier, who he's really impressed me the last sort of 2 months or so. Trippier getting down the wing, he's so good getting forward, and I think he's really going to fight Kyle Walker for the regular right back spot in the league now. But a good win for Spurs, and you have to say that considering they lost to the same team in last year's last 32, it was a good win for them. And you know, they'd be a team that a lot of teams in the next stage will want to avoid in the draw, because the players they've got, you know, they didn't even have Harry Kane last night because he broke his nose against Palace at the weekend. I mean, it was a really disappointing that defeat to Palace in the FA Cup. That was a blow for Spurs, because Palace bad form in that one, and so I think Spurs would have wanted to carry on in the FA Cup as well, but to go out there and then obviously lose Kane for last night's match, so he wasn't there. But I mean, the other players, Eriksen was good, Dele Alli had a cracking game again, although he got booked for a dive, which was so harsh. It wasn't really a dive at all, so now he's suspended for the second leg, so that's a blow for them. But then if you go back to the first leg, he actually probably should have been sent off in the first leg for a kick he did on Tomovic. So either way, he probably should have been suspended for one of these games. But it was another good performance from him, and Spurs through, and they're a team that no one else will want to face, are they?
Certainly, and that 3-0 winning, it's such an impressive one. Because we were speaking before the first leg about how they might put the Europa League on the back burner a bit, with the Premier League such a possibility for them to win it for the first time. So for them to do that against one of Italy's top teams shows that they're not taking their foot off the pedal at all in any competition. Whether that hurts them later down the line in the Premier League remains to be seen, but you've got to admire them for going for it on all fronts, and as you say, a really impressive victory, and they will fancy their chance of going pretty far in the competition. I mean, there was a couple of big scalps went out in the round of 32. My favourites, Napoli, crashed out to Villarreal, which was a bit of a shock. I thought Napoli might go all the way, but at the same time, there are also a lot of big teams left in the competition. Obviously, United and Liverpool have their own aspirations of going far. Borussia Dortmund have got to be considered up there among the favourites. Sevilla as well. Villarreal did well to knock out Napoli. So, Bilbao up there, Leverkusen into the next round. There's a lot of big teams in there, and it's going to be interesting. It's shaping up to be a really exciting Europa League. So there's a lot of teams in there who could realistically go all the way. Tottenham is certainly in there. They sent a message out to Fiorentina, out to Europe with that win over Fiorentina, as they have out to England with their form in the Premier League so far this season. So on all fronts, I've been so impressed by Tottenham all season.
Yeah, I was just going to say, the last 16, it's really shaping up quite nicely, isn't it? I mean, you mentioned Dortmund there, 3-0 aggregate winners against Porto. Not conceding against them was a really good result. And he didn't mention Valencia there, 10-0 aggregate winners. I mean, I know it's only Rapid Vienna, not exactly the strongest team. And, you know, the 6-0 win in the first leg, it was always going to be a bit of a weird game last night. But for them to, you know, even win 4-0 away from home, that's four wins in a row for Gary Neville now. He seems to be, you know, finding his rhythm a bit there. And there's talk that he might be offered a two-year contract after, you know, a very dodgy start there. So they're going to be a team people want to avoid. And I thought Leverkusen 4-1 against Lisbon, I thought that was a really good result. And you know, they've got Javier Hernandez scoring goals for fun there, and Caligiuri, his set pieces are absolutely fantastic when he puts corners and free kicks in. So, and Lazio 4-2 against Galatasaray as well. Shakhtar 3-0 winners aggregate against Schalke. So some really, you know, really impressive performances in the round of 32. And yeah, like you said, really shaping up to be a very interesting last 16.
Yeah, it is, and obviously I'm going to have to pick a new favourite now. Napoli have gone out, and it's a difficult one to choose from, really. I think you do have to take that Valencia win with a pinch of salt, but beating any team in the knockout stage of Europe 10-0 over aggregate is a fantastic result, so they certainly can't be counted out. It'll be interesting to see if they get drawn. There could be some pretty tasty draws in the last 16 if Gary Neville's Valencia get United, if Jurgen Klopp returns to Borussia Dortmund. So I'm looking forward to that draw. It should be a good one, whatever happens. And of all the teams left in the competition, with the exception of perhaps Braga and Sparta Prague, you'd say, maybe Anderlecht as well, you'd say that they would all fancy their chance of getting pretty far in the competition. Fenerbahce, they're not going to be an easy team to beat. So, you know, there's a lot of teams in there who are going to win it. And obviously, Europa League usually is on the back burner compared to the Champions League. But this is shaping up to be a really tasty tournament this year.
Yeah, it certainly will be. And I think, you know, there should be, like I said, even if say, Klopp doesn't go to Dortmund or Neville doesn't go to United, even if those don't happen, there's definitely going to be some really interesting draws there. And the last, because, you know, the Europa League in years gone by tends to get some teams in the last 16 who you feel maybe shouldn't be there. But this year, there's just so many big names in there, because you'd expect, you know, teams like United, you know, they'd usually be in the Champions League. And the three English teams there, they're all three big English teams. And some of them, I mean, you'd expect Napoli to be in the Champions League, Dortmund to be in the Champions League, but all these teams, you know, playing in the Europa League now. So it should be a very interesting competition. Good for the competition, for sure. But let's move on to this weekend's Premier League games now. Pick of the games in the Premier League, you'd have to say, on Sunday. Old Premier League rivalry, Manchester United against Arsenal. Arsenal, like we've said, defeat to Barcelona in midweek. And then before that as well, last weekend in the FA Cup, couldn't beat Hull City, the Championship leaders, at home in the FA Cup. So not exactly a good week for Arsenal after, you know, that massive win they had over Leicester in the Premier League the week before.
No, and that's surprising, because that win over Leicester came in such circumstances that you thought that's really going to let them kick on for the rest of the season and just put them full of confidence. Trailing against Leicester having a man sent off, and then Arsenal coming from behind and with the last action of the game pretty much getting the win against the title rivals in what was pretty much a make or break game for their title hopes. If they'd lost that game, they would have been out of the title race more or less. So it was such a huge victory for them. So for them to follow that up a week later with a goalless draw against Hull, okay, Hull, you know, they defended well and they got a bit of luck to keep Arsenal at bay, but still to draw a blank at home against Hull in the FA Cup would have been really disappointing. Expectations were obviously a lot lower against Barcelona, and in a way that performance against Barcelona will give them more encouragement, and although they lost in the draw against Hullwood. So, you know, it's an interesting contrast between these two teams. Obviously, United got a big win in midweek in Europe. Arsenal lost in midweek in Europe. But both sides will be coming into this match relatively happy with their performances. United obviously fell behind in that game, but they fought back well. Arsenal fought well against one of the top teams in the world, one of the top teams of all time, for my reckoning. So it's an interesting tie. Both, although contrasting results in midweek, will come into this match with a bit of confidence that they can pick up the victory. And it's probably a huge game for both sides, because obviously Arsenal, they're in the title race, only 2 points behind Leicester. But for Manchester United, if they don't win this, then, you know, their top four hopes are really hanging by the balance. They could start the game seventh in the table if Southampton and West Ham both win as well. So it's a huge, huge game for Man United if they stand any chance of reaching the top four. City aren't going to be in action, obviously, because of the League Cup, so the gap's not going to grow from 6 points for Man United, but they would lose a game in hand against City. So it's bordering must-win for United, but the same probably applies to Arsenal as well for their title hopes.
Yeah, definitely. You mentioned Southampton there. They've got that's one of the best games of the weekend. They play Chelsea 3 o'clock on Saturday, and the way Southampton have been playing of late, you know, just keeping so many clean sheets since Fraser Forster's return. And then Chelsea playing pretty well as well. You know, we've already said that last weekend, you know, 5-1 winners against City in the FA Cup, but still, it was still a good performance from them, even though City did, you know, play a very weakened team. And Chelsea, you know, they're sitting 12th now, still, you know, they're definitely not going to make the top four, but there's a chance if they really push on in this second half of the season, they could get up into one of the Europa League spots.
Yeah, there is, and there were signs over the last week or two that they're starting to hit their old form again. Under Hiddink, you know, they're still unbeaten domestically, but too many draws. I think they've only won 3 of their 9 Premier League games under Hiddink. But the 5-1 win over Newcastle last time out in the Premier League was really good. Even in defeat to PSG, they impressed. It was a decent performance, better than many expected. And then they took advantage, obviously, of that City weakened team to cruise to victory in the FA Cup. So it's been a pretty good spell for Chelsea, even including that defeat to PSG. So they'll go into that match fairly confident. Away from home, I don't think they've conceded a single goal since Jose Mourinho left the club as well. So they're in good form. And you mentioned Southampton's clean sheet record. Remarkable. 6 clean sheets in a row ever since Fraser Forster returned to the side. They're the form team in the Premier League at the moment. They've raced up from 13th in the table up to 6th. And as I mentioned earlier, could move up to fifth and close the gap on the top four to just 4 points with a victory this weekend. So it's a really intriguing game. I'm actually predicting a goalless draw in this one because both sides have a decent clean sheet record recently. Chelsea away from home and Southampton both home and away. So I can see not many goals in the match, but I think it's going to be a pretty intriguing encounter.
Yeah, it should be, yeah. And as for the leaders, Leicester, you know, really disappointing to lose that game to Arsenal, but they've had 2 weeks off, no fixtures since then. And, you know, only 12 games of the season left now. It's not long at all. And when you look at the run-ins, Leicester, they've played all their matches against the other teams or their title rivals in the top four. And their run-in in terms of, I saw a stat about, you know, the average position of the teams they face in the final 12 games, and theirs is the lowest out of any of the title rivals. And, you know, this weekend they host Norwich, who have been in pretty bad form. I mean, Norwich, they got a 2-2 draw against West Ham last time, which was, you know, a decent result, but they've been shipping goals for fun recently, Norwich. And you'd expect, you know, a well-rested Vardy and Mahrez to have far too much for them. And, you know, then Leicester, you know, their next few fixtures, they all look very winnable. And you'd have to say that they want to be in a good position come the end of the season, because I think their last three games, they're against Man U, Everton and Chelsea, which all three very difficult games. And you'd have to say that if they can string together some wins now, they should put themselves in a really good position.
Yeah, they should. And those final three games are the real thing that's preventing me from outright claiming them as champions already, I think, because, as you mentioned, they're running up to that point. Is, you know, they'd expect to get a lot of points from that one. Norwich this weekend, you mentioned the draw against West Ham, but they were 2-0 up to that one. They blew the 2-goal lead, so that will feel like another defeat, and that's their only point from the last 18 available in the Premier League. So they're in pretty dire straits at the moment. I think this weekend it's a huge, huge weekend for Leicester, and both Leicester and Tottenham, because they're both going into games they'd expect to win. Leicester obviously would expect to beat Norwich. Tottenham would expect to beat Swansea on the Sunday. And with Arsenal facing a difficult trip to Old Trafford, that's not an easy game for them to get. And obviously Manchester City not in action because they're in the League Cup final. So it's a real opportunity for Leicester and Tottenham to both steal a march on them. And wow, City at least would have a game in hand. It would certainly put the pressure on Arsenal and City below them if Leicester and Tottenham were both to win those games, which we'd expect them to do this weekend.
Yeah, as for the bottom of the table, Newcastle, they're not in action because they were due to play City, who are in the League Cup final, but Sunderland and Aston Villa both got quite tough away games. Sunderland go to West Ham in the Saturday lunchtime game, and then Villa go to Stoke at 3 o'clock. And I mean, the way the table's looking at the moment, you know, Sunderland's only a point now behind Norwich outside the bottom three after that win at United. And like we said, Villa, you know, they are going to go down unless something remarkable, even more remarkable than what Leicester did last season, happens. But as for Sunderland, you know, there's a real chance now they could stay up, with Newcastle not playing this weekend, Norwich going to Leicester. You know, if Sunderland can get a point there at West Ham, or even better, they'll probably climb out of the bottom three. And things, you know, looking all right for Sam Allardyce's men.
Yeah, they are, and of those teams in and around the relegation zone, I'd probably say they've got the best chance this weekend of picking something up from those games. I'd still expect West Ham to win that, but I'd give Sunderland more chance of getting something out of the game than I would Aston Villa away to Stoke. I think that's got a home win written all over it, and obviously we've already mentioned Norwich against Leicester. That looks like a Leicester victory, and Swansea against Tottenham looks like a Tottenham win. So out of that, it could be a really good weekend if Sunderland are able to get anything out of the early kickoff against West Ham. As I mentioned, though, West Ham, they're in good form themselves, and they themselves could move up to fifth momentarily. Also, like Southampton, could close the gap on the top four to 4 points. So they've got plenty to fight for as well. That's going to be an interesting game. Obviously, Sam Allardyce's return to Upton Park as well. So he'll look to use his inside knowledge there to get a good result for Sunderland. And it's not beyond the realms of possibility that they might get one. I'd still back West Ham, but out of the relegation candidates in action this weekend, I'd say Sunderland are in the best position to pick up something and perhaps move out of the relegation zone, which would be a huge, huge bonus for them.
Absolutely, yeah, because say a month or two ago, it really looked like they might sort of be doomed if they didn't pick up a few points and might be, you know, cut adrift a bit with Villa, but they've come back quite well, and obviously that win over United last time out was absolutely huge for them. But West Ham, you know, they come into that game, Payet's been in good form since his return, and last time out for West Ham in the FA Cup fifth round, they fell behind at Blackburn Rovers. Really good goal from Ben Marshall for Blackburn, but then after that West Ham ended up winning 5-1. Payet scored another glorious free kick in that game, and you know, they went through to the quarterfinals. Good result for them, but then, you know, tough draw for West Ham, wasn't it? They have to go to Old Trafford in the quarterfinals after Man U, like we said, beat Shrewsbury. But West Ham dark horses for the FA Cup this year?
Yeah, I think so. I picked Watford, but West Ham are definitely up there at the moment, and that performance against Blackburn was really impressive. They got the sort of squad that can really punish any lower league teams, but also hurt the top teams left in the competition, so they'll really fancy their chances. For me, I think it's going to be between Watford and West Ham to make the final and perhaps win it out of the potential dark horses. And Watford, I give, you know, a decent amount of backing to, because if Hull can beat Arsenal in the next round, then you'd expect Watford maybe to get a decent result at the KC Stadium. Of course, that is a big if, and should Arsenal get through that replay, then it's going to be a lot tougher for Watford. But at the same time, West Ham have got a tough match against Manchester United at Old Trafford as well. So it's an interesting quarter-final lineup for the FA Cup, because Arsenal, United, both home ties against two teams who really fancy their chances. Everton, Chelsea is a really good tie. Chelsea will really fancy their chance of salvaging something from the season with the FA Cup, but Everton, we've mentioned a few times, with their run to the League Cup already this season, that they haven't won a major trophy since 1995, so they'll be desperate. And then, you know, Reading, the only Championship side left in the competition, should Hull go out, at home to Crystal Palace. Both sides will fancy their chance in that match as well. Palace in terrible form apart from in the FA Cup, but have generally been better on the road this season. So it's pretty much all the ties in that are quite difficult to call, and I'm looking forward to going through to seeing who goes through to the semi-finals, because this could be a really open FA Cup. Any one of the sides, with the possible exception of Reading and probably Hull, will really fancy their chance of winning the competition, and there's a big chance that it could be a relatively new name on the trophy as well.
Yeah, I think Reading and Palace, they'd both be happy with that draw, really. I think of the teams left in the competition, you'd say that probably those two, the way things are going, are the weakest there. So for them to draw each other, they'd both be pretty happy there. And I think the other teams would have been looking to, well, I mean, Reading especially, everyone else would have been looking to draw them. And for Palace to get them, I know it's an away tie for them, but you'd have to say that that's the weakest of the... I mean, especially if Arsenal do end up beating Hull, that's definitely the weakest of the four ties there. And that means that one of those teams going to Wembley for the semi-final. I mean, Reading obviously went there recently for last year's semi-final against Arsenal when I think they lost an extra time, didn't they, with that Federici mistake from Sanchez's shot. But as for Palace, like you said, they've been struggling a lot recently in the Premier League, and for them to get an easy draw like that in the quarterfinals, and it's a real chance for them to go to Wembley. And for a club like Palace, who, you know, a very good following, you know, it's not far for them to go to Wembley. If they can get there, it'd be a fantastic occasion for them.
It would be fantastic, and it'd cap off, although things aren't going too well for them in the Premier League at the moment, it'd cap off a pretty impressive season for them. Pardew's done a fantastic job. I don't think the job he's done there can be understated, really. He's turned them into a real force to be reckoned with. And yeah, they're not going through a good spell in the Premier League at the moment, but a couple of wins, it's all pretty tight around the mid-tables, but a couple of wins will propel them back into the top half of the table. And it wasn't long ago that they were being touted as potential European contenders. It wasn't too long ago that they were being touted by some as potential top four contenders when they were going on a good run. So they've certainly got the quality. They've suffered from injuries themselves, but their performances in the FA Cup this season have been really impressive. They've beaten three Premier League teams in Southampton, Stoke and Tottenham. Tottenham probably the most impressive lot away from home, with Tottenham in such good form. So yeah, they're in good form in the FA Cup, if not the Premier League, and they will fancy their chances. It'll be a big trip to Wembley for them to get to the semi-finals, and then if they can get through that to the finals, then it'll be one of the biggest days in the club's recent history, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's all we've got time for today then, Barnes. Thanks a lot, and thanks very much for listening. Be sure to head to sportsmile.co.uk this weekend. We've got live coverage of the League Cup final, all those big Premier League games, the Madrid derby as well in La Liga. It looks like a fantastic weekend. We'll be back next week for the next episode of the podcast. See you then.